Hi, and welcome to our Doc Industry Podcast, season number 5. Here's your podcast about creative documentary and animated film industry. It's in collaboration with our dear friends, the Programmers of Color Collective and What's Up with Docs. A big shout out to our partners, supporters, and contributors. Check them out. And hey, it's good to have you here. Enjoy your conversation. Here is Doc Industry Podcast, season number 5.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sunil Sadarangani, producer, journalist, and film festival programmer, and I'll be moderating this episode talking about two documentary projects from India, the Netflix documentary series, The Hunt for Veerappan, and the Amazon Prime feature documentary, Womb, with Women of My Billion. Joining me to talk about both these eye-opening projects is Apoorva Bakshi, who is the producer on both The Hunt for Veerappan and Women of My Billion. Apoorva formed Audacious Originals to produce groundbreaking content like the ones we're going to talk about shortly, identifying and sourcing stories told by South Asian storytellers. She's an International Emmy Award-winning producer, and some of her distinct projects include the Netflix series Delhi Crime, National Award-winning films Shut Up Sona, Leeches, and more. She serves as a co-founder and managing partner of Golden Caravan, Audacious Originals, and Project Fuel, and has carved a niche as one of the youngest producers of South Asian productions. We are going to talk about the series The Hunt for Veerappan first, and joining Apoorva and me is the director of the series, Selvamani Selvaraj, a well-known director from South India who has made a mark with his diverse body of work, including films such as Neela and Kanta. Selvamani got his big break working with Ang Lee on The Life of Pi, and after that, there was no looking back for this very talented director. It's so wonderful to have you both, Apoorva and Selva, on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Sunil.
So, how does it feel? Where you guys right now in India, right?
Yes. Thanks, Sunil, for the wonderful introduction.
No, you're most welcome, of course. I saw the series and I was kind of like quiet because it's the first time I've seen, you know, a version of this story of Veerappan, you know, being told on screen. And of course, this is, you know, just for both of you, because both of you are the writers along with the others on the show. How did you both get attracted to Veerappan's story? And, you know, whoever wants to jump in can talk about that.
I think Apoorva will, Apu, you, after you.
I think I should describe the fever dream that Selvamani had, because he had finished his first film, and we met at the NFTC Film Bazaar here in Goa. And at that time, I was just wrapping my Delhi Crime production, and Selva came to me with an incredible glint in his eye and said that there is a story that you and I should tell. And this is the first time, you know, it's just it's a meet and greet. And I said, okay, tell me more, because I was like, what is this confidence, you know, that a filmmaker has? And I call it the Hindi word shiddat, which was pouring out of him, which means just a dedicated fever dream that he has to tell the story. He started talking, and we kept talking for like 6 hours. I canceled all my meetings, and it was just mesmerizing and captivating to hear his deep passion to want to tell the story for various reasons, which I will let him dive into. But I had not heard a more dedicated elevator pitch could turn into a lunch meeting, into an evening a dinner, and we kept going at it. I said, I will consider, and because I wanted to assimilate more material. So, you know, Veerappan was a mustachioed bandit that all of us in the country had heard of in growing up in the 90s. He was that guy, the boogeyman, who our parents would say, oh, if you don't eat your meals, the boogeyman will come and get you. So Veerappan will get you. Exactly. And that's about the perception that, you know, countrymen in the north, especially, I grew up in the north of India, had that there was this very iconic caricature bandit who was prowling the southern jungles and kidnapping people and you know, smuggling, was a tusker, and so sandalwood as well. But the layers that we dived into really opened up a wormhole like Alice in Wonderland world, and then I could figure why Salva was so deeply hypnotized by the story. What led to the rest of the exploration was I said, okay, I'll consider this. I came back to Bombay. I live in India. I live in the United States. So I was flying back in 3 days, and I said, so Salva called again and said, what did you think after a day or two? And I said, Salva, I'll come back in the next 3 weeks and we'll meet again. I should do a lot of travel back then. And so I was like, no, this needs to be, we need to figure out this now. And I said, don't worry, I'll read material and I'll come back to you. But Salva came to Bombay the next day. And that kind of really, it did. He was at my door, and we spent another day discussing the material. But what I did understand was my reasons to jump into the story was not only the story, because there was just so much to explore, but Salva's fever dream to make it happen. So handing it over to Salva.
Yes, please, Salva, please tell us.
Yeah, so, I mean, clearly Apurva is also a storyteller, right? You can see, like, the fever dream of mine, when she talks about it, you know it's a shared dream. So the reason for this to happen is because it's been a part of our growing up, and it was a part of the lores, and such fast, and with, I think we all consumed it with so much fascination, all of us, and especially me, because it, like, going to school and talking about Veerappan was a routine for our, like, the fact that he was hiding in the forest and there were so many people looking for him, and there was just a lot of actions from his side, and it just kept going on and on, and the way it became part of our mainstream narrative, it's, and at that age, when I'm so sucked into for stories, I found, like, this extremely fascinating. And that's the mark that the real life story left on me, with so much to imagine. We knew very little, even though he's been part of the discourse for 20 years, we knew very little about him. And what stayed were the lores, and they were really fascinating. And I when I wanted to go a little deeper and find my next story after my debut, I really, like, this was also the multiple part narrative storytelling, that suddenly the world just exploded into very local content that can travel globally, being told as a multi-part series. So I was really captivated by that possibility, because usually to write a feature or to write anything, you explore a lot and then you condense. But the series format was just coming into India. It was capturing a global imagination, like local stories that can be told global. And the first and probably the only story till now that hit me this hard is the Veerappan story, that it happened right next to us, but it's something that everybody can experience. And there's so much to learn from it. What I realized very quickly, because the reinitiation of interest happened when I read a couple of books. One was Chasing the Brigand by Mr. K. Vijay Kumar, which was the telling from the cop side, and it was written with so much fascination. It was written with so much imagination and a very real story, right? So this irony of, like, these unbelievable things happening in real life kept hitting at every turn of the story. It's just a stack up of unbelievable things that came together and happened in a place very close to us. The world is yet to know about it. But the second book that I read, which is a Tamil book called Solagar Thotti, spoke about what happened to the indigenous communities when this manhunt was happening. We all knew that it was a 20-year-long manhunt, and there were, like, so much wreck and devastation coming from the bandit. But the actions of the cop were written in detail in very hard-hitting, brutal way, through this book, and I was, like, deeply moved by the story, and the writing was intense, and I had to meet the writer, and he's a lawyer, and I got to know that he fought for the indigenous communities against the human rights violation over a period of 10 years, and he needed to, like, move on in life. He was unable to, like, just bogged down by the weight that this real story gave him, and that outpour was that book. And I realized that There's so much for me to know. There's so much for the world to know about what happened, because from there on, I could really feel this need to be told. Like, I definitely wanted to tell it as a fictional series for its cinematic imagination. Like, inside the forest, this man who could not be caught, like a group of bandits, they're fighting against establishment. What is the cause? But like, just the canvas is so fictional, like it's so in for fiction. But when I explored like the first few layers, I realized that it needs to be told as a documentary. It needs to be told by the people who went through this journey. They need to talk, and the audience need to experience what I am experiencing right now, which is a lot of awe, shock, and surprise, and so much of discovery. This is a story that helped me and my team, all of us, discover definitely a bit more about ourselves and the society that we live in. Like, what is law? Like, yeah. I mean, right. Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's, I definitely resonate with that, because when I, you know, the first episode just kind of settles you in with, you know, what this could be. I know where obviously, even as a young adult and as a young person growing up in India too, in the 80s and the 90s, you know, I read about, you know, about Veerappan in the news then, all of that. Now disconnecting after so many years and then watching your series, and the way how you introduced him, how you kind of weaved that first part, the first episode, it was really fascinating for me to just watch, to see him, you know, kind of, you reveal this person and who is this, and is almost like an enigma, you know, but there's that realness that comes across later, which we'll get into. But so I did definitely feel that, for sure. And for me to see you connect and talk to some of Veerappan's inner circle, his, you know, ex-gang members, and of course his wife, Muthu Lakshmi. How was that for you guys as, you know, story, as, you know, kind of getting into the story, and what was that whole thought behind, you know, having, obviously, you know, them narrating the story along with the law enforcement and stuff like that, and of course each one side. What was your method, and how did you connect with them?
Yes, I think one of the first things that became apparent is that we have to enter into the story without any preconceived notion, with no bias, because they've lived a life which I was in awe of, and like my entire team, we were in awe of our storytellers, you know, without bias. We didn't, like, one of the things that we were consistent about is the fact that we never wanted to pick a side, bring any of our judgments, opinions into the telling, right? Like, it's so intense what these people have gone through. I mean, be it years in the forest, years in jail, like everybody was flirting with life and death on an everyday basis, like the police officers, the people there, the people who were in the gang. So they were ready to put their life on the line for a cause. And I think we approached it with a sense of intrigue. And what made them take the kind of decisions that they did? Because I think what was happening was just a lot of unraveling of learnings that was coming through every time. I think we interviewed, we got a bit more humility to, like, because we could have gone in with a sense of knowledge entitlement, but when we interview somebody, when we talk to them, and they strip their heart open, we realized that we knew little. We needed to hear this from them, right? So definitely it just came out of intrigue. And I think our only effort was to make it comfortable for them to, like, have an intimate conversation. How could we facilitate that? Be it from where we make them sit to what we make them, like, just like record life and give them this opportunity to be able to say things that are buried deep within. I think for most people, we were able to get there. Like, they are in a strange way, the story has cast so much in their life that they haven't found a closure. They all want a closure, And I think these tellings do give them a sense of, in a very small way, but it does.
You know, Sava's right. It was very important for us to be able to let them, it was almost cathartic actually for them to revisit some form of, as much as, you know, they invited us and let us, made us privy to their own life stories and their experiences. Some of them remembered it like it happened yesterday. And it felt like it was a way of talking about it, and us, we just wanted to listen, and us listening to them kind of was a way of healing of sorts. I don't know if you can really, maybe it's ambitious of me to say that word, but it was definitely like they were waiting to tell the story. And nobody really was listening to them for all these years. And all we did was patiently listen. And what it did was build a tremendous amount of trust, because whatever they had gone through in their lives, each one of the storytellers, I think the first thing that really leaves just your own way of being is the lack of trust, like this mistrust with the system, with the people, with the machineries, and with each other, because like the Salva said, they had literally fought death on a daily basis. So the biggest I would say trust building exercise that took the longest time, it took us almost 2.5 years to convince Muthu Lakshmi, we lovingly call her Akka, to come on board and tell the story, because she'd never ever told the story from her perspective. She'd given interviews, she'd shared her opinions, but she had never dived into telling the story in its totality. From her POV, and I would not say sad at all. I think it was a very propulsive youth and young. She was a young adult, like she was not even an adult when she got married. You know, she was 15, and how she came of age into being the you know, the wife of a bandit, on the run, having her children, and yet today she lives proud heart about how her daughters are educated, they are doing very well in their lives. How she was able to also be in love with someone who the whole country considered an outlaw and an outlier. I would describe him as an outlier because it's not for us to judge what transpired, not in our time, but it was interesting to see her recount everything from her perspective, and it did take us 2.5 years to convince her. You know, Selva and Monisha, my producing partner, would visit her on a weekly or bi-weekly basis to be able to tell her that we will do things or tell the story from an unbiased point of view. And I think that was a very important goalpost and a non-negotiable that we had kind of inculcated between the creative team, that we will not put ourselves, our filters, our perspectives into picture. We will tell their story exactly the way they want to tell it. And so our signature comes in the construction and the design of the documentary, but storytelling was as they wanted to tell it. And so that would say required trust. They invited us. It was our greatest privilege. Each one of them, the officers involved, the journalists involved, the villagers, you know, Selva beautifully quoted. And I think one of the statements that blew me away was that when the elephants walk, the grass gets trampled. And that side of the story never gets told. We had Ambu, who was a little kid when he joined the gang, and now he's this incredible human being who's trying. He served jail time for all his youth, and now he is deeply involved in rehabilitating, you know, and working for very, very prolific causes for rehabilitated criminals as well as younger kids in the region. So mm-hmm. It was our greatest privilege to interview them and hear their stories and be a part of this telling.
And what about, it took 2.5 years for you to, two and a half years to get Muthu Lakshmi to agree to kind of, be a part of it. What about his ex-gang members? How did they kind of come into the picture and how did you kind of corral them to be a part of this?
Definitely Muthu Lakshmi. She took the most time to be, because she had so much at stake. The fact that her story is untold and she wanted it to be at the right platform, she needed the most. But the others, the fact that we went and stayed in these villages and there was a sense of trust that was built over time. Like, I remember this Mahalingam, one of the people to open up Gopinath, the village for us. The early gang members, I was there for 6 months before he told me that he was so close and started divulging information. So they took their time in different ways, but I think we always waited, and like they never. I think then I can comfortably say that nobody felt the pressure of a camera in front of them when they started pouring out. So there was that kind of. What nonfiction needs, and luckily I had that. You know, the team was blessed to have that kind of time to build the trust, and that comes from producing partners, network partners, and I think some of the best practices were brought into the Hunt for Veerappan. And patience is the key, and that's patience is the key for nonfiction, because what you get when they tell that story is something that you can never recreate. You cannot recreate even with the best tools, right? Like when they are going into a place of memory and the telling becomes transcendental, it's worth it. It's worth everything. And they all become characters. They all, like, you start to, there's so much of storytelling with just like people telling about what happened to their own.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I saw the characters, I mean, them as real people, their characters come alive as part of this narrative that was strung together, which was really, obviously there's the whole team behind, but really well strung together. And that's what I wanted to actually also my next observation, and just wanted to get some more insight from both of you and, about the narrative structure of the series, because I saw two things kind of happening here, especially Veerappan's character arc in the narrative, one of him being the dreaded forest king bandit. You can feel the fear, and you can feel that, when you're showing the footage and showing him speak, and the way he kind of what actions he took, as obviously, this person who went out there and did those mass killings of the elephants and of people and who came in his way. And then you showed the other side of him as a crusader, revolutionary, and that arc, that how you built it over that, over the four episodes was really masterful, and I have to say that, to give that to you guys. And you also put a spotlight on the other face of the law enforcement as well, and that whole fine line of the state politics between the two states of Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, and then how the law enforcement and him, how that whole, that whole game that was being played. So I would love to get some insight about just weaving that, that structure, that narrative structure. And, what did you guys have to kind of grapple with, as writers to create this really fine balancing act?
It's a very good question, Sunil, and a good observation. And I think when people talk about the series, one of the first things that they remark about is the weaving, the forward momentum. And I think Apurva and I would agree that a very critical person for this is our executive producer, Kimberly Hassett. who brought in her years of experience in nonfiction, because for me this was the first to like at this scale, so I needed support, and we got like wonderful mentorship, who also was very hands-on in the edit, in structuring, and she is a structuring master, because there was just so much that the story had to offer, and I was definitely in the weeds too, to like explore more, and so I needed somebody to pull me back and like get this into a four-part series, and Apurva and Kimberly were my minders at that, were the people who made sure that we were able to tell this in a four parts. And we knew that that was something that the story was offering, that the layers and the depths. Now, how to say it in an intrigue, in the exciting way, is what you were talking about it, in the way we unravel Veerappan, and the fact that we start at a certain period, and how we explore the story of what was happening in that village in the first episode. Yes, Anna.
Yeah, sorry, I missed that point, and I would love for you to elaborate on that, because you did. I know you threw some light on his early years of him being a Tusker and, you know, killing all the elephants and all of that, but you put that big emphasis on the 90s. And so that was my question also. You know, I was thinking about like why that specific period to kind of, you know, kind of really kind of start that whole you know,
yeah,
to kind I of think create that the his character from there, from that point.
Yeah, so that lensing, I think that's the genius of Alok Devichand, our partner from the network, who, well, we were talking about the names, and we had very exciting names. He was the one who brought it as the hunt for Veerappan, because it is the longest, costliest manhunt. And for us to focus on the hunt, and the 1990 is the start of that. The fact that he had shot these police officers, and the special task force was formed to catch this guy, and never before has it taken so long and so many officers and so much money. And so that was the start of the hunt. So 1990, or that period in time in Gopinatham, was a great way to enter the story, is what we realized, because he's become this enigma that you would, like, he, for the most part of a journey, remained an enigma. And for the most of the people who were in this journey also, like, they were in the pursuit of him, sacrificing a lot in life, but they never met him. So he is an enigma in a lot of people's conscience. And I thought that was a great way to like enter, like when he's built up to be this enigma and he needs to be caught. And you're exploring it through these perspectives of the girl who's fallen in love, an investigative journalist, and the forest officer who was telling everybody, who's making so much noise inside the institution that this is going to become a big problem. And when it becomes, what does it become? So the entry, I think, was one of the things that we realized pretty early on, is that it needs to feel linear because it's a long manhunt. So you need to feel the fatigue and the dread of the 20-year manhunt when you arrive at the end. And so like the linear, but within that, how to like structure, I think we went through multiple drafts, and I would have Apurva talk about it because she was involved from the first writing, and I come from fiction. So I started writing like scenes, you know, this person talks about it in this way. So I wrote full flesh. I fleshed out screenplays, and Apurva got involved from that point in time all the way till the final edit. So I think it'll be nice to hear it from her.
It's a mammoth task. It was a film school.
I bet. Yeah. I saw that happening. I was watching it. I was like, oh my God, this is definitely, I could kind of see you guys in the writer's, you know, den, and kind of going back and forth and throwing things.
It was a safe space that we created. The first promise we made to each other was, because it was just such dense material. These were long interviews, you know, and if you talk about it from the comparable of what our current youth really consumes, is like listicles and instant information, but these were those long essays and there's long interviews with three spanning over three, four days, where a single storyteller is narrating details of what they went through or what their perception, their lived experiences were on the story, on the timeline in the story. And so it was a very, very rich experience to listen to them. And at least the three other writers, which is including me, Kimberly Hassan and Forrest Borey, who were on the West Coast. They were in LA, I was in San Francisco, and we would have these long sessions of just watching also, because it had to be subtitled for us. We didn't understand the language, or we didn't know the language. But it was very, very clear that, initially I said, it was almost like their lived experience, and it like happened yesterday to them. Their clarity of recalling of the memory was so sharp that it helped us start figuring out, how do you really define the hunt while discovering the, for now we can say it, fractured psyche of this, of this bandit who rose from nothing to becoming, of an outlaw and an outlier for most of the country. So it was the structuring process was very, very clear. I think two things that, the first thing that I think was a non-negotiable and something that Selva and I arrived at alone was, we will not use recreation. That was a very, very conscious call because I feel like as audiences, if you tell them to imagine a scenario, the audience, according to their own lived experiences, will see a version that is most profound, defined for them. And that was a very clear call. Selva fought with me for a while, but then I think he saw merit in understanding that when you impose visual cues for audience, it becomes your telling, your version, whereas it could be just perceived as how you perceive a reading piece, right? Like, so that was our intention. To not use recreation was very, very conscious call. The other thing that I think, when we started receiving material, this gold mine that Selva and our incredible team here, led by Naina and Monisha, started sending across to the edit table in LA, it was extremely interesting to observe that we were three perspectives. I was with Selva from day one. Kimberly was there as more of a guiding, putting guardrails around our exploration and saying, start thinking structure from the very beginning. And Forrest came at the absolute end. His name is Forrest, which was interesting. But right. He came at the absolute end and he did not talk to any one of us. He consumed a couple of books, many books, researched material, but we did not really influence his decisions. So his reception, like, he locked himself for a month and he started watching material. And then when we sat down to build a structure, and I remember that whiteboard exercise we all did was, how do you really make sure that you are unlayering and uncovering the human himself and the entire layered storylines of who all were involved, because we had multiple storytellers as well. It was not, there were three or four who kind of built the spine of the four episodes, but there were others in different phases of their lives who kept coming and going. So it was by design, the cliffhangers were extremely important to build and structure. It was important to bring in the youth of the country who hadn't even heard his name. Anybody who was born in 2000, they were 4 years old when he was captured and killed. They didn't know who Veerappan was, not the mustachioed image as well. So yeah. It was important to draw them in with extremely well-crafted graphics as well as music. And yeah. I think our he is a genius. I would give a big shout out to Janu. He is, I think Salva started making films because Janu would compose to visually. So I think their friendship really, really not only led to an incredible collaboration on this series, but Janu gave a layer. His music gives a layer of writing strength to the series. That kind of an entry, you knew. We were very, very particular about having that entry point to the series, because otherwise, you know, you can go into investigative drama series about, you know, people who have been famous and infamous, but the younger lot doesn't care too much. And especially outside of the country, right? For a global audience, it was important to be able to use the right kind of tools to be able to tell it. So our act structures were broadly, it was very collaborative process. I have never been in, like, I feel richest film school in terms of experience, where everybody would layer their thoughts, and the time that Netflix allowed us to have to be able to make it was an incredible impetus as well. But expertise from Kim and Forrest, and the raw energy from Salva, and the collection of the gold mine that he did. I must highlight the fact that Salva literally almost lost his leg while shooting the series, because he would not wear proper shoes in these jungles because he wanted to be one with the villagers. He lived with them, and that's why I say it was a dream. Leeches got to his, oh my god, I cannot tell you, like, one day I get a call from a hospital and I'm like, his emergency services need to reach my creator because this is going into dangerous quarters. But that is the, I think it was just, like I said, it was our greatest privilege to tell the story. And I think he has been the most incredible creator I have had the privilege to work with, who will not stop till he exactly knows that he has been able to get what he wanted. And I don't think till the last day he felt like he had it all. But and that's where the minders, the minding duties really came into picture. We were like, okay, this is it, right? Like, this is the best foot in the time we had, in the budgets we had, in the support we had. This is the best version we can tell for this story to reach the far reaching audience across the world. But it was very intentional to design it that way.
I saw that come across, and it was really well structured and very solid. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. But I wanted you to kind of say this piece because it's so important. And I'm sorry, you know, it kind of went off a little bit. But I think this is really important that we got that, because it really shows, really gives insight into the whole involvement and the process and the passion. So thank you for making this. And Salva, I don't know if you have anything to close, saying to close this discussion, but would love to get some ending thoughts from you.
Yeah, no, I would just reminisce on the beauty of filmmaking in general, how it's just the process, and especially with nonfiction, it's very rewarding, because what's happening is in everything that I make from now on, the impact of that kind of research and the care for representation. What happens with documentaries is you're so careful in representing a character, and I think that responsibility, when I'm bringing into fiction and in general, in the process of anything that I do from here, I can feel the strong impact of what a documentary filmmaking, that the rich experience that it gives, because in general, filmmaking is self-discovery. It's a very inward process of, like, you wanting to find something. And that's right. The process and the journey. But with documentaries, it's very enriching.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you guys for your time, and really appreciate this.
Sunil, I just wanted to say that I would encourage the audience worldwide to please watch the series if they haven't. It's our labor of love, and I hope you love it as much as we love making it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. All right. So, we'll look out for this, and thank you guys for taking the time out again, and have a great day back home in India, and I miss it. So hopefully I'll be there soon too myself. So
yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is part one of the episode with Apoorva Bakshi and Selvamani Selvaraj talking about the documentary series The Hunt for Veerappan. And part two will be coming soon with Apoorva and Srishti Bakshi talking about the feature documentary film Womb, Women of My Billion.